Michael Hawes, and you're listening to Trail of Tears. Bigger boys, no cry. Sometimes men paint themselves into corners. I know I have at various junctures in my life. More than once, and I never saw it coming any of the times. Life will give you clues, though. Sometimes subtle, and sometimes with a lot of chili. I got myself into one of those cul-de-sacs during my time on the trail. There's a hexagram in the Oracle of the I Ching called Khan, the Abysmal. In one possible stage of this situation, it is wise to do nothing, for your fate is tied to the first person who happens along and sees you down in the trap that you are in. Any action on your part will worsen your chances of getting out. I was in my 30s, and I had fried my bacon a little too crisp for a little too long. Something was going to crumble. We all get like this from time to time. Funny how another euphemism for it is having too much on one's plate. Marrying, divorcing, working overtime, going to court, courting, remarrying, fathering, paying bills, fees, and fines, etc., ad nausea, had all led me to lose 20 pounds which I needed and had driven me to the tuna fish solution. There was an abandoned house about halfway through my route, and it had a big overgrown yard and a rotten front porch. Perfect place to take a break and refuel. I was working another 8-hour shift 5 nights a week at this time. I had learned to sleep while sitting at my booth in a coffee shop near the station after completing my mailman duties. It was too far to travel home before the next job. The waitress was in on it, and she was my alarm clock. I would place a book on the table and cradle my head as if reading intently so as not to alert the owner. The gal would come by every 20 minutes or so and act like she was refilling my cup. Because of her, I never missed my bus. I had been feeling worn out, and I figured I needed two things: more protein and more serotonin. I hefted 2 cases of tuna and a case of salmon to the old front porch on that route, and I treated myself to a can or two each day as a supplement to my other meals. I befriended a stray cat, which benefited greatly from this arrangement, and warned me of interlopers. A few blocks away was a high school that I had dubbed Heartbreak High. It was a last-chance school for young people who were not going to make it through the system. Many of the students were far older than they should have been for the grades they were in, and all of them had stories that had put them there. My firstborn son had injured himself in the play area of a daycare that was attached to the school once. We were having our scheduled biweekly father and son visit. He had gashed his scalp. The family doctor who had delivered him at birth was only 2 blocks away. I took him there in seconds, and we stood dripping on the floor. I was told that doctors don't do stitches in their offices anymore. She phoned us a cab. I had been bitten a few weeks later by a homeless woman's dog only yards away from my son's accident site, and I had gone to the same doctor. I needed only a tetanus shot, some stitches, and a clean-up. After the same disclaimer, I phoned my own cab, and I never saw that doctor again. One morning, in the rainy season, I stubbed my big toe. I had just gone a block or so, and my pouches were jammed full and heavy. I was wearing post office issue rubber boots. No tread, no insulation, no arch support. Just a 1/16 of an inch of rubberized canvas. It was just after 9 a.m. The combined force of my weight, the weight of the mail, and my quick pace equaled a mighty sore toe. I hopped around swearing the same as anyone would have. The only thing for it was to walk it off, I figured. Stepping lightly on one side for quite a ways, I went through the route. Long after I reckoned it should have quit hurting as much as it did, I began to feel a new element in the pain, that of heat. It was hot deep inside. I couldn't remember feeling that particular feeling before. The walk was difficult, to say the least, but finally, I was at my desk eating my sandwiches. I took off the rain boot and pulled off my sock. My toe and my foot were massive and the same color as the black rubber boot. I walked over to the nearest hospital and I got an x-ray. The Englishman technician swore at me when I told him what time it had occurred. He held up the film and showed me the big toe joint, 3 bones back, which had been split in two by the impact. It was 4:30 p.m. He cussed me out for walking on it all day.
"You're an idiot, mate. You've ballsed up the soft tissue, frayed all the ligaments, and ground the cartilage to fucking bits. That's after it broke, yeah?"
He shook his head in disbelief and disgust. I figured he was just the kind of Christopher Robin dude whose mother used to remove all the crust from his buttered toast. Damn finicky Englishman. I hobbled off to tell the good news to my wife and sons. All these events bunched together in time, and I was not getting any clues. After I was back on the trail making friends with my unhappy joint, I developed pre-pneumonia, and I fought it with more tins of fish. I had made the acquaintance of the cook at the Heartbreak High, and we shared our smoke breaks together out behind his kitchen door. He was about 7 or 8 years younger than me and had a wholesome face and golden-colored hair. I'll call him Cookie. Once, when he was on a long holiday, I sat on the curb by his kitchen door for my break. A group of 4 students came out the side door and began walking to the McDonald's a few blocks away. They were all young ladies, and they all had their backs to me. I watched them while I sat. One girl absolutely mesmerized me. I became entranced by her long, corn silk-colored hair and every other feature of feminine beauty she possessed in abundance. That girl was a high-born Viking, if not a Valkyrie. The 4 of them slowly disappeared down the sidewalk, their backs to me and holding hands. Presently, I saw the 4 girls returning. I lit a smoke and anxiously waited to see the face of that Nordic beauty. The group loomed into sight slowly like a watched ship coming into port. If you take your eyes away for a second, it will somehow have closed much more the distance than you would have thought. I looked away periodically so as not to appear to be staring. When I looked up the 3rd time, they were 15 feet away, and I was rocked back on my heels. The 3 brunettes were flanking a creature with no face. Only a parchment-colored skull. She had no eyelids, no nose, and no lips. The skin that had grown back after what must have been a devastating burn accident was paper white, paper thin, and tightly drawn over her skull. I looked away and then back again to make sure it was so. It was so, and the 3 girls smiled as they passed into the school. The blonde girl looked directly at me and nodded. I started to feel something within coming to a conclusion, but I couldn't name it. When Cookie got back from his absence, we resumed our breaks together. He had been away on a retreat where men learned to confront things in the company of other men. Type of thing I'd never do. I'd rather confront a grizzly bear in its own cave. It was a group, and people don't behave naturally in groups. He'd gotten a lot of his own personal things worked out in the time he'd spent, though. I talked of my 2 jobs, my ongoing custody battle, wherein I had fired my lawyer and taken up my own case by cramming at the law library, my pre-pneumonia, with a subsequent burst eardrum from repeated infections, some interesting adventures with a pimp on my route, and other chit-chat. When I got to the part about breaking my foot and walking the whole route on the busted bone, Cookie's face changed from his usual friendly expression. He got 2 fistfuls of my shirt and lifted me to eye level, walked slowly backwards to a brick wall, and started pounding me against it, gently but firmly. He drilled me with his eyes and chanted in a voice not loud but with lots of key, "Mike, that's not normal." He said it about 10 times, and my head banged the wall an equal number of times. His eyes looked like he had been cutting onions, and he put me down. He swore softly and turned to go inside his kitchen. I limped off on my notorious foot. He had gotten my attention. We spoke no more after that, and weeks went by. I went to chiropractors, homeopaths, Chinese herbalists, massage therapists, and even an acupuncturist. He was a Chinese-Filipino guy. He had a contraption that put electric pulses through the needles after he inserted them. It was supposed to heighten the healing effect and to get your yin ready to hold hands with your yang,
dispel evil winds, open the crystal gate to your pituitary, and balance your hot and cold. I like the poster on the wall and the Kuan Yin statuette on his cluttered desk the best. The poor fellow had a potentiometer set up so he could adjust the current. It was supposed to be just perceptible, and then he backed off one mark on his dial. He kept asking me to tell him when I felt it. I waited, and he waited. He repeated his instructions like I was a dumb child. I also grew annoyed. In 15 years I have never seen anything like this, he finally said when I signaled that I could just feel the juice. He showed me the dial. It was 3 notches below max. I continued sessions until my coverage ran out. As I bid him farewell, he told me that from what he could see, I had a, quote, angry liver, unquote. I thanked him and I went to a drugstore and I bought a spiral notebook. I decided to take this diagnosis out into the corral and see if I could saddle it up. My idea was to compile a list of all the things that could possibly be making my liver angry. I started from when the doctor slapped my ass unceremoniously at birth. I started a new page and wrote about the loud music and yelling voices that had disturbed my 9-month swim. First things first. I continued my bullet list, and it was a whopper by the time I got to the second notebook. I knew I had to fix up what I could, face up to what I could, and suck up the rest. I learned that the raw material for getting pissed off is the most abundant resource the earth has to offer. I got the idea to use that ore to make useful implements instead of carrying it around in an ever-growing bag. One afternoon, in a rain worthy of a Hitchcock film, I walked over a mushy soccer pitch to visit my elder son after his school with my younger son in tow. Halfway across, I got it. Just like that. Later, I called it a mud bubble, because that's how it rose up into my consciousness. Like the glob in a lava lamp, a revelation that was key to me having any kind of non-self-destructive life made itself firmly and quietly known. I may write of it another time, but suffice it to say, it was about misplaced guilt, self-punishment, and the subconscious getting out of bed and putting on some damn pants to help with the chores borne by the conscious. As I walked home in the downpour with my little boy, I realized that I couldn't remember myself crying since I was about 12 years old. I'd never thought about that fact, but now it seemed incredible. I knew I got itchy eyes when I heard music or watched movies, but not a drop of water had crossed my cheek. I thought that's what Visine was for. I was so astonished I spoke about it to my son. On the way home he said, "It's simple, Pop. Look it. You just gotta squeeze 'em shut a teeny bit and the water just squirts out. Anyone can do it." We went inside and my son brought his mother's Kleenex box straight away to where I sat on the couch like a man trying to help out in a delivery room. I was reminded of a rusty sea valve I had to change at a shipyard where I used to work on an old tug that was being retrofitted. I had knocked it gently with a sledgehammer after being unable to budge it with my biggest pipe wrenches, propane torch, and WD-40. It took a few good blows before it had sheared off. Gloopy muck had burbled out first. When I poked it with a screwdriver, clear water had gushed forth, copiously. My assistant ran off to resupply another box of swabs. Being a clever lad, he judged that it was more of a job for paper towels, and he returned with a whole roll. We killed the roll. Every ailment I had been suffering went out with the garbage that night. My early days on this earth were corrosive, misplaced guilt was a sludge, music was my WD-40, my wife was the propane torch, the Viking girl was the 18-inch pipe wrench, Cookie was the sledgehammer, and my boy was the screwdriver. The rusty valve was my heart, and the water was unexpressed emotions drawn constantly from the sea of life. The tug was me, and the shipyard was a trail of tears. If I had a been a born in La Calabria, I no have a this a goddamn traveler.